energy drinks.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Every Thursday, join us for a personal tour of Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S., a show co-hosted by HWC founder and homeopath Debbie Brock and attorney at law Alan Phillips. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your thoughts and questions. Let's go!
Welcome. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips, speaking to you from the Vaccine Rights Studios in beautiful Asheville, North Carolina. Joining me at the half-hour mark, my wonderful co-host, Debbie Brock, founder of Homeopathy World Community. We'll be looking at some of the news in the U.S. and around the world on vaccines at that time in just a few minutes. But first today, in quick response, I did hear Tiger Lily in the previous show mention, and by the way, Tiger Lily, so glad that you are, let's see if I can get my mouth working today, so glad that you are addressing so many of these important vaccine issues. There is so much going on, and it's so disturbing on so many levels for so many reasons, and so just really appreciate you bringing your expertise and your personal experience to bear on the subject. I had not heard about vaccines and PSTD, so this is going to be, but I can't say I'm surprised. You know, I guess I always am in one sense and disappointed, but I read a figure just a few weeks ago that there are over 270 new vaccines either already waiting for approval by the FDA, because vaccines have to be licensed by the FDA before they can be administered in the U.S. So over 270 vaccines either already waiting for approval or in clinical trials, those last stages before going to the FDA for approval. And so anything you can think of that somebody might invent a vaccine for, whether it seems like it has anything to do with infectious disease or not, you know, they're either have or working on vaccines for obesity and cocaine addiction, and I mean, you name it. Somebody's got a vaccine, either already has one for it or they're working on one. It's just, and then 150 other things you never would have thought of. So it's just crazy, this mad rush to crank out as many vaccines as possible. And outgoing Mayor Bloomberg in New York City just mandated flu vaccines for really young children in New York City, kids in preschool, I think. It's just crazy. You know, maybe we'll come back to that a little later. I wanted to focus first thing today, and on probably knowing me, it'll take up the first half-hour segment here, but I wanted to focus on something that's going on in in California, but this is something that has implications for the rest of the U.S. There are currently over 100 vaccine bills pending in over 30 states. Most of them, if they are passed into law, will further in pretty dramatic ways, in some instances, this very aggressive pro-vaccine agenda. So there's just a lot of movement in this area legislatively. And in 2012, the California legislature passed a new law regarding vaccine exemptions for students. And the new law takes effect in January of 2014. I don't know why they put it so far out, but it doesn't take effect until next month, January 1st. And I want to talk about three different stages to this. I've got an article that will where I talk about this in some detail, too, that'll hopefully be up on Natural News somewhere in the next couple of days. But there's three different main points I want to talk about. First of all, is the statute, this new statute having to do with vaccine exemptions, is it constitutional? I'll give you a hint. My answer to that is no, but I want to explain that in just a little bit. And when the bill was signed into law by Governor Brown in California, he directed the Department of Public Health, which is required by the statute to create a form that parents have to use to exercise the exemption. He directed the Department of Health to include a religious exemption on the form, which I think was great because the form for exercising an exemption requires parents to jump through some hoops. And so what Governor Brown was essentially saying is, look, if people have religious objections to vaccines, they shouldn't have to jump through all these other hoops. That's a constitutionally and common sense correct thing to do. You know, if you have religious objections to vaccines, these other hoops, by the way, which amount to getting a lecture from a doctor about all the wonderfulness of vaccines and how terrible you are for not, you know, getting them, how you're putting everybody at risk, all the basic pro-vaccine propaganda, and the doctor has to sign the form saying that you've gotten the lecture, and then the parent has to sign the form saying they got the lecture. I mean, they really are going out of their way here to bully parents in California, not the only place doing that, of course, but anyway, the parents have to have a letter or affidavit and saying what vaccines they've gotten or the kids have gotten and not gotten, and then they have to get this form signed by a doctor after going through some kind of lecture, some educational process. And constitutionally, that's inappropriate, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. But the governor directs the Department of Public Health to create a religious exemption on the form so people who are opposed to vaccines for religious reasons don't have to jump through all those other hoops. So this was a good idea. But the question that I want to address and focus on in part here is, does the governor have authority to do that? Can the governor tell the Department of Public Health to change their form? You know, can he require them to do that? Hint, the answer is no, in my opinion. And the third thing I'm going to do is then look at the actual changed form itself and ask, is the way that that form has been set up with respect to religious exemptions, is it constitutional? I'm giving away all my secrets up front here. My answer to that is no. So I want to talk about these three problems. You know, California has, if I remember correctly, has one of these, what they call three strikes and you're out law, which pertains to felons. If you get three felonies, that third felon, they're going to lock you away and throw away the key. It's a very severe law. Might have some interesting or appropriate applications at times, but anytime you have a sort of sweeping, everybody who falls into this category gets this result kind of law, there are always going to be instances where the law ends up being abusive to people. In other words, penalizing or punishing people in ways that they really don't deserve. But that's another topic I want to get onto that doesn't have anything really to do with vaccines directly. But I was just using it sort of as a metaphor because I'm going to tell you three specific things that I think are unconstitutional in the way this law has been handled from the get-go to the implementation. And it's a shame, speaking metaphorically, of course, or by way of analogy, it's a shame there's not a three strikes and you're out law that applies to this, because when the legislature gets it wrong and the governor gets it wrong and then the health department, the Department of Public Health gets it wrong, the whole thing ought to just be out the window. But anyway, starting at the top, the new law requires, if you're going to exercise an exemption to vaccines as a student, adult student, or for your children, as a parent of kids enrolled in school, you have to do two or three different things, which I just mentioned. You have to have a letter or affidavit stating what vaccines have been administered and not. You have to get that form from the health department and get a doctor or other. There's a list of healthcare professionals that can do this. It includes, of course, medical doctors, includes at least some school nurses, and then there's some others. There's a fairly narrow list. Get one of them to give you the lecture and sign the form, and then you've got to sign the form. I wonder if just getting the lecture and someone to sign it, is that going to be too cumbersome for some people? And if it is, for example, I think the fact that school nurses can do this is going to make it more easy or more possible for a lot of parents. But I know there was a similar law passed in Washington State back in 2011, and some of the feedback I got anecdotally about that law when it was implemented is that parents were having to spend huge amounts of money. Doctors were charging an arm and a leg to sign the form and give the lecture or whatever it is. I heard a figure, and this may be an isolated instance, but I heard a figure once of $400, and I just couldn't believe it. Really? Somebody's got to pay $400 to exercise an exemption? So that raises potentially constitutional due process questions, what's called procedural due process. Is that really fundamentally unfair? Certainly is for anybody in our dwindling middle class or lower socioeconomic levels. I mean, I'm an attorney, and $400 is outrageous. Of course, I'm not a typical attorney, I suppose, in that respect, socioeconomically. Anyway, there are federal court cases that have looked at vaccine religious exemptions and other religious freedom issues, religious rights given by state or federal government, federal civil rights law, for example, where the bottom line is that the First Amendment of the Constitution, which includes, among other things, the Free Exercise Clause, what's called the Free Exercise Clause, that refers to the free exercise of religion. And we have, of course, a right in this country to the free exercise of religion, and it only requires, your religious beliefs are protected by the First Amendment of the Constitution if you meet two criteria, according to a number of different federal courts that have looked at a lot of different religion issues concerning religion and the law. The beliefs have to be religious in nature, and that is really, really broad, by the way. You know, the next question in terms of legal analysis is, well, what exactly does that phrase mean? And it's not a short answer question, but let me give you the very first part of the answer. It's very, very broad. You do not have to belong to any organized religion at all. And if you do belong to one, it doesn't matter what the organized religion's views on any given issue are as it pertains to any legal rights, such as a right to refuse vaccines where you have that right for religious reasons. All that matters is your interpretation of your religion. So people think, oh, Catholics can't have a vaccine religious exemption. No, they can. Maybe other people in your church or your religious institution disagree with you. Maybe if you're vocal about your interpretation of your religion, maybe that even causes you some friction with fellow church members or church leaders or whatever, and that's unfortunate if it does. But as between you and the law, that doesn't matter. You could be the only person on the planet with your particular religious beliefs, and if they are religious in nature and sincerely held, you have the protection of the First Amendment, and you only have to meet those two criteria. Now, when I do private consultations with clients, I spend 2.5 hours explaining exactly what that means and how do you write a statement of beliefs if you're in a situation where you have to put in writing, or if you should be in a situation where you have to talk to somebody about your religious beliefs that are opposed to immunizations. Good idea to talk to an attorney if you're in that situation, because there are lots of legal pitfalls to avoid. The way the law works is not consistent with most people's common sense approach. So it's just an area that's kind of fraught with landmines, so to speak. But again, as a starting place, two simple criteria, religious in nature and sincerely held. Federal law, the federal U.S. Constitution, the First Amendment, federal law is a higher legal authority than state law. The state cannot say on the one hand, yes, you may refuse vaccines for religious reasons. Now, the law in California just uses the word beliefs. It doesn't say religious or not religious. The Department of Public Health in the past and currently on their website has language where they say, yes, this includes religious beliefs. And there's sort of general legal principle. I'll give you the short story of the lengthier, more formal answer. But the short story is that in most states, if a law, a statute is unambiguous, if it clearly has only one interpretation, then it means exactly what it says. You can't add or take away from it. So the word beliefs, of course, would be inclusive of any beliefs. That would include religious beliefs. It would certainly include non-religious beliefs, too. But anyway, the California law, short story, encompasses, in addition to non-religious beliefs, religious objections to vaccinations. And the state, being subordinate to the federal government for those things that the federal government has authority over, such as freedom of religion, the state can't come and add more requirements. So as to those people who have sincerely held religious beliefs that are opposed to vaccines, the new California law is unconstitutional because it's requiring those people to jump through additional hoops. That federal law says they don't have to jump through. They only need two things. So I think it's bad law in that respect. Now, the next thing I want to talk about, Governor Brown recognizing, and this is very much to his credit, recognizing that there's a concern here with respect to people with religious beliefs, and perhaps in response to some of the complaints about the law, directs the Department of Public Health in their exemption form to include a religious exemption. Well, I don't think a governor has that authority, and let me give you the explanation. We have this concept in our both state and federal legal systems of separation of powers. Both each individual state and the federal government, they all have these three different branches of government. They have the executive branch. Now, at the federal level, that's the president and his cabinet. At the state level, that's the governor and his cabinet or his office, whatever is included in that. Then we have the legislative, the state legislature or general assembly, and then the judicial branch, which is the courts. None of these three branches has authority directly to control any of the other branches. They all serve as kind of a check and balance for one another. If the legislature passes a bad law, the courts can declare it unconstitutional and strike the law. You know, for example, there's just different ways that these three branches, theoretically at least, keep each other in check. The Department of Public Health is an agency created by the legislature, so it's part of the legislative branch. Most state agencies and federal agencies are created by state or federal legislature. At the federal level, that's Congress. Executive branches can and do create agencies as well, but most agencies are created by the legislative branch, and that's going to be true with departments of health around the country. And so the governor, who's the executive branch, cannot dictate, you know, a mandate to the Department of Public Health. Now, I guess I don't see any harm in him asking, you know, and the Department of Public Health can probably, well, let's put it like this. A state agency that's created by a state legislature has whatever authority that the state legislature delegates to it, properly delegates to it. No more than that. And occasionally state agencies will overstep their boundaries. They'll do something that's not really within their authority to do. So, you know, the Governor Brown I believe, is probably overstepping his legal authority when he makes this issues this mandate to the Department of Public Health. But the Department of Public Health may be within its own authority to go along with that. In other words, the Department of Public Health could say, I suppose, well, you don't have authority to tell us what to do. We're not going to do that. But it would be a show of good faith, even if that's what they're thinking. Well, they can't. He can't really tell us to do this, but well, you know, he's got a good point there. We'll go along with it. So anyway, the Department of Public Health, let's assume benefit of the doubt. Assume for the moment that it's within their authority, their discretion, to go ahead and follow the governor's, let's call it a request, that even though maybe they don't have to, they can. Well, they've done that. They've created a form, and it provides for a religious exemption. And if you meet the qualifications for the religious exemption, you don't have to jump through these other hoops. You don't have to go get a lecture. And if you object to vaccines on religious grounds, why does it matter what a doctor's opinion about this, the merits of vaccines are? You know, it's between you and God. It's not about what the doctors think. So it doesn't make sense for somebody who has religious objections to have to go through a lecture. So again, kudos to Governor Brown for trying to address that issue. Shame on the Department of Public Health for the manner in which they did this, though. They used the word membership on their form, which pretty clearly implies, if not requires outright, that you've got to be a member of an organized religion to qualify. And I'm sorry, no, you don't. That's overstepping constitutional boundaries, and a state health department doesn't have that authority. They can't exceed the statutory authority granted to them by the state legislature, and the legislature cannot exceed the constitutional authority, which is a higher authority than them. Well, the legislature exceeded constitutional authority. The governor appears to have done so with his mandate to the Department of Public Health, and the Department of Public Health has violated constitutional boundaries, exceeded its authority by limiting the religious exemption to people in an organized religion. And it's just so disturbing when I see this, because these cases, these court cases, federal court cases on this issue go back decades, 30, 40 years or more. This is not something that just happened a year ago that everybody hasn't figured out or learned about or heard of yet. And I can't imagine the Department of Public Health putting in a religious exemption without turning to their own attorneys and saying, what's the proper way to do this? And I can't imagine any attorney who's smart enough to get in and out of law school and get through, for God's sakes, the California bar, probably one of the more difficult bars in the country, not either already knowing this or at least not doing a little bit of quick research to find out where the legal boundaries are. I mean, anybody who has studied religion and the law at all, this is, you know, religion and law 101 kind of stuff. And maybe it just seems that way to me because I've been working with it for so many years with vaccine religious exemptions, but I see this in other areas where religion comes up. In federal civil rights law, for an employee to have religious accommodation in the workplace, which could be for religious objection to a mandatory flu vaccine, for example, but it could be any other religious issue. So it's not limited at all to vaccines. For almost 50 years, there have been laws protecting employees' rights with respect to their religious beliefs in the workplace. Not new stuff. And the boundaries in that area of religion and the law are the same, sincerely held religious belief. So it is really disconcerting to see this issue come up and be mishandled just repeatedly over and over again. Washington State mishandled this back in 2011. I sent a brief but professional legal analysis citing the federal court cases, and some activists in Washington took this to the governor's office after the General Assembly passed this unconstitutional bill anyway, and asked the governor not to sign it because it was unconstitutional. It would not have taken a huge change in the bill to make it constitutional. It could have been fixed very easily. The governor's response, oh, that's not up to us, that's up to the courts to decide. In other words, We're going to do whatever the heck we want to because we are above you peons. We are above the Constitution. We are above the law. We can do whatever we want because we are politicians and we have the power, and you guys just all suck and go away. And I'm sorry if this sounds rude, but I am just personally offended and offended on behalf of all the citizens of Washington State and the state of California. And Oregon did something similar earlier this year. And everyone else in the U.S., when people can take their position of power and just say, screw the Constitution, we're going to do whatever the heck we want to, because the pharmaceutical industry is paying us to, or whatever it is, whatever their explanation or reason or whatever really is going on, we should not just roll over and play dead and let these people roll over our individual rights, our societal rights, the very foundation of this country, the Constitution. And we're not talking about some sort of legitimate constitutional controversy here. We're not talking about an unresolved point of law. And there are many unresolved points of law. We're talking about law that is well settled for decades in this country and throughout this country, in state and federal courts around the country. There's nothing ambiguous here. And just to take all of this one step further, Obamacare has language. I haven't heard anybody anywhere talk about this yet except myself. Obamacare has language providing for a religious exemption. If you have qualifying religious beliefs, you don't have to follow the Obamacare mandate. I'll encourage you to stay tuned to this show, future editions, because I will come back in more detail on this issue after I've had time to dig into the research a little more. But the language requires membership in an organized religion. And I just have to stop and scratch my head. What are you folks talking about? Again, this show, this issue about religious freedom and organized religion is long settled. Decades ago, this is not some new novel issue. We were founded, this country was founded on some fundamental basic freedoms, including freedom of religion. And the idea that you don't have to be a member of an organized religion for legal purposes, religion and the law, okay, that's a newer issue. That's not 200 years old, but it's decades old at this point. What are these people missing? And I can't help but be cynical and say, well, they did that so they could say they, you know, had it. But they included religious exemptions so they could say, okay, we got a religious exemption. We're cool. We did the politically correct thing. But it's just difficult to believe that it was accidental that they used language restricting it to an organized religion, because it's a well-established point of law that you can't do that. You cannot do that. It's unconstitutional. Your religious beliefs are protected so long as they are religious in nature and sincerely held. And you could be the only one on the planet. It does not have to be associated with any organized religion whatsoever. So I hope to dig into that and come back with more details about how to avail yourself of that opportunity to legally avoid Obamacare through religious objections. So stay tuned for that. We're going to go to break here, and then joining me right after break, my lovely co-host, Miss Debbie Brook, founder of Homeopathy World Community. You are listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. I'm vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips, and we will be back with you in just a couple of minutes, so don't go away.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaurs, Rednecks, and Radicals, a political satire exposing the evil agendas of Obamacare and redistribution of wealth that leaves you with a thought-provoking ending. Will mankind survive, or will the U.S. natural-born citizen become extinct? It's available at Amazon.com. You can also visit my website at www.fightbacklegalabuse.com for more information. So order your copy today and empower yourself with knowledge before injustices come knocking on your back door unexpectedly.
You know the Constitution like the back of your hand. You've read books, listened to podcasts, attended lectures, surfed websites, and watched videos. You've made liberty your life's goal. But something seems to be missing. Stickers from LibertyStickers.com. Exercise your freedom of speech with the world's most dangerous bumper stickers. That's LibertyStickers.com. But wait, there's more. You can buy Liberty stickers wholesale. Get them for 99 cents each when you put 100 or more in your shopping cart in any combination. Sell them or give them away. They're great for gun shows, flea markets, fairs, outreach, and more. Earn extra money, promote freedom, and spread the word. Need custom stickers, labels, or decals for your organization or business? Liberty Stickers makes them. Go to LibertyStickers.com to order or call 877-873-9626. LibertyStickers.com, the world's most dangerous stickers.
Get ready for the epic new documentary adventure ride of your life. Shade, the motion picture. A view into the globalist domain. An Embellus and Burmese film.
Nothing in this world works the way you think it does. Nothing. Governments do not operate the way you think they do. Banks do not do what you think they do. The police department is not here for what you think it is. Nothing in your world works the way you think it does.
We have to let them know the new world government has been identified, and they thought they just clawed the world economy to bring in a worldwide police state, but instead it's going to bring them down.
You have to stand up. Speak up. Speak out.
Shade the motion picture. Order your copy of the DVD today at ShadeTheMotionPicture.com.
This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. Warriors, you are not alone. There are pockets of resistance all around the planet. We are at the brink. Read about it in The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance. Available now at newsstands everywhere. The Sovereign is a monthly 24-page tabloid newspaper featuring incendiary content about life during wartime in the age of Obama. Warriors, keep to date every month. Remember to read The Sovereign, newspaper of the resistance, available at newsstands everywhere. This alert is for all you boppers out there in the big city, all you street people with an ear for the action. This is Mercy. If you're listening to this message, warriors, you are the resistance. This is Mercy. Mine will be the last voice you will ever hear. Don't be alarmed.
We are back. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. This is Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. And Debbie, are you with us?
Calling in December 12th, 2013, moving along in the end of the year. Alan, are we going to be on break the last 2 weeks of the month?
Thank you for reminding me, Debbie. Yes, we will. We have one more show. I think one more show coming up next week, and
okay.
Greg Glaser will be back with us next Thursday. But then we've got a couple of Thursdays off. That would be right after. I'm trying to look at my calendar here, and I'm not sure it's helping me any.
Okay, we'll look it up later. Let's just move along.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely the last Thursday, which is the 26th, we'll be off on the 26th. I may have given you some mixed signals about that. So we'll check. We'll clarify that later. But definitely, we'll be off on the 26th.
Okay. And we want to wish everyone a safe and stressful time leading up to the holiday season, because it can cause a lot of change in emotion and anticipation and stress and shopping and that whole thing. And maybe you can figure out some ways to do it differently this year. In the meantime, we're talking about vaccines and your rights, and I've been tuning in, listening to the passionate Alan Phillips. I'm looking forward to the future show when you're going to talk about opting out of Obamacare for religious reasons or something of that nature, and why somebody would want to opt out if it's going to cover you and give you some health care protection. As a matter of fact, Monday on the Health In Show, December 16th, Dr. Bruck and myself will be talking about societal politics, societies, different forms of societies and cultures and healthcare, and how they manage to take care of their people, or what is your opinion on that? So we're going to talk about, I want to say the big word, communism, socialism, capitalism, all those kinds of things.
That should be fascinating. And
okay.
And whether or not you can call yourself one thing when you're something else, because I think we started out as a republic, but I'm not sure we are. I'm not convinced that we're not moving away from that at a perhaps rapid pace. But let's move on to some vaccine issues here, Debbie.
Okay.
You may have heard me mention earlier what's going on in New York. The Board of Health, New York City Board of Health, has now approved the flu shot mandate for young children. And Debbie, I got to tell you, this one just, I don't even have language for it. This is just so disturbing. Dr. Paul King with the Coalition for Mercury-Free Drugs was on another weekly show that I do recently, talking about research that shows that children who are given the flu shot have four times the rate of non-flu respiratory illness compared to those that didn't get the flu shot. You know, now for lay people, the flu is anything that, you know, quacks like the flu is the flu. And you know, you can take a specimen and go in the laboratory and determine whether or not it actually is a flu strain. But the Cochrane Collaboration in the recent past has said there are over 200 different viruses that cause flu-like symptoms. So on just sort of a common sense level, the flu is the flu. You know, whether it really is, scientifically speaking, a flu virus or not. So when people say, can you get the flu from the flu vaccine? Well, you can certainly get respiratory illness. And if you want to call it something other than the flu, that's fine. And if it is technically something other than the flu, that's fine. But if you're going to be four times as sick after getting the flu shot, you know, what's the point in getting the flu shot? And there's even been research from the, let me see if I can remember what this is, Center for Infectious Disease Research and Policy, I think is the name of the entity, with the University of Minnesota. And they were communicating recently, reporting about research that showed if you got the flu vaccine, and this was probably adults, get the flu vaccine 2 years in a row, it might actually lower your protection against the flu. I could go through a long list, but the bottom line is there's tons of research out there coming from peer-reviewed, you know, mainstream medical sources that basically says flu vaccines have little or no effectiveness, but they can injure and kill you. So, yeah, let's give them to all the children we can. You know, let's prune this overgrown humanity bush.
Who are their advisors? Because, I mean, well, one of the things that concerns me is not enough people really know what's going on It's a very, very small minority of the population who are getting the information and self-educating about the other things that happen with vaccines. They're only getting a simple message: get your flu vaccine. It will protect you. It is safe. This is deemed by the authority of your medical community and your government. It is not telling you, and when you get it, you don't get a pamphlet telling you the possible adverse effects or outcomes. It is only afterwards when something happens, and then you, in your mind, are going to have to figure out what is the link, because you may think you may not realize that your adverse effects are related to your vaccination. So this is a problem in our society. One of the things is we get the message that flu vaccines have metal, have mercury, have thimerosal, and that is a safety issue. That's totally known. Don't eat fish that have mercury, and don't break your thermometer. I mean, how many people use thermometers today in that way? The most people probably use a digital thermometer, but the old-fashioned ones with the mercury, or light bulbs with mercury. I mean, there's all sorts of ways that we get the message it is not safe, yet we are putting it directly into the body. Now, who are the advisors for the people making these rules?
Well, and Debbie, I really want to underscore a point, because you're absolutely right. It's a minority of people who are informed or take the initiative or even understand there's some reason to take the initiative to educate themselves on the issue. But I want to flip that one on its head for just a quick moment here, because at the other side of the spectrum, it's a very tiny minority of people who actually make the decisions and implement policy. And what has happened in this country over a period of decades, maybe even longer, is that industry has very deliberately, very methodically, very proactively sought and succeeded in obtaining greater and greater influence and control over policy and law, the legislative process, to the point where, as it concerns the healthcare arena, that the people who are in state and federal agencies and probably the New York City Board of Health and similar entities around the country are increasingly staffed by people who are there to support and promote the pharmaceutical agenda. And particularly in this issue, because it is literally a life and death matter. And if I could have everyone in the nation's attention for 15 seconds, you know, the things I would fill that space with on the vaccine issue would be: vaccines cause injury and death. The federal government pays out $100 million a year for that, and 90 to 99% of the harm never even gets reported. You know, if people knew nothing more than that quick little spiel, the whole nation would be taking a second look here, would be taking a step back and saying, what the heck's going on? And then, of course,
that's why the billboards, which I happen to have seen one as I was traveling by the NVIC, the National Vaccine Information Network, that they have a billboard telling you to educate before you vaccinate. What does it say? Do you know what the exact words are on the billboard?
I don't, but that's awesome that you got to go traveling and also that you got to see one of those. There has been, not in any, you know, really...
Oh, it's called, I'm finding the billboard. It's Know the Risks. And we were really pleasantly surprised to see that on the road in New York State, as a matter of fact. Know the risks.
Well, there have been a handful of billboards around the country that have been funded and put up, you know, trying to raise awareness on the issue, and that is so awesome. But we're so profoundly outfunded. And that's what makes the success we've had and the degree of success we've had so just absolutely amazing, and what really gives me encouragement, because despite the enormous power and control over the media at all levels, not just television and radio, but newspapers, billboards, on the internet as well, it's such, you know, the dominance of the pharmaceutical-based agenda, not only its presence, but its ability to suppress and control to a very large extent the dissemination of any contrary information, no matter how ultimately true it may be. It's just really heartening when you see, against such great odds, we still make strides here and there. We're still growing in number and awareness. People are starting to figure out what's going on. And, the whole system, I want to say I fear, and at the same time I pray for. You know, it's sort of like, I guess I'm sort of mixed on this. You know, I don't want the chaos of a system collapse, but on the other hand, I sometimes feel like the only way we're going to get from where we are to where we need to be is to hit the reset button and then start over, because the system itself is just too far gone. It's not going to be fixed by, you know, a couple of laws here and there. The control of industry, the control that industry exerts over state and federal legislative processes and state and federal health and other agencies is just, I don't see a short, quick fix. But I feel like the system's going to crash under its own weight at some point, Debbie, because when enough people figure out what's going on, and maybe Obamacare will be one of the straws that breaks the camel's back. You know, I don't know about the rest of the people in the country, and I'm very skeptical of most of what I hear on radio or TV, because most of that is controlled by people who decide what message you're going to hear. I'll give you a real quick example. I was on a drive early this morning, and I had NPR on, and they were reporting this many thousands of people in North Carolina have signed up, this many thousands of people in South Carolina, and what a great increase this was over a month ago, and so forth. I get home, I flip on a conservative radio station, and they're saying, well, nationally, the enrollment rate of Obamacare is about a negative 4 to 5 million, and what they mean by that is there's 4 to 5 million more people who have lost their coverage because of Obamacare than there are people who so far have signed up for coverage for Obamacare. So, you know, the message you hear depends on whatever whoever's telling you what they want you to believe, and it's just really hard to know what is really going on anywhere, you know. But I don't know if, you know, I'm sort of somewhere between.
I can tell you, Alan, obviously, I can assure you that the data of the truth, of the facts, are being collected, because we are living under a state of Big Brother, and you know for sure that every single thing you say and do, whether it is on your mobile phone, your text device, your internet, your social network, wherever you are, all that data is being collected. And there are probably huge calculators, analytics, doing analytics on what the people are really saying, feeling, and doing. So I don't think it's a secret to those in power. But what you said at the opening hour of our segment today, the power and policy-making power is in the hands of a few. And I think, you know, when you see those videos and those websites showing you financial charts on who has the money, who is making the earnings, and who is the wealthiest, and the huge, huge contrast of the minute, is it even 1% of the population that has all the money and the rest of the population doesn't? That, I mean, it's an analog. Every single place that you go, all of the power, the money, the influence, the control is in the hands of a few. So when is that table going to turn? I don't know. There was just in the Ukraine, they don't like it that way, and they just revolted. So I don't know about America. I think that we are maybe, I don't know what the answer is, whether we're just afraid or we don't know how or it hasn't gotten bad enough yet.
I think we're just apathetic. I think America is, you know, it's really interesting. I'm hesitating here because I don't want to sound, we're starting to go down a path. I don't want to be misunderstood as this being a racial comment. But one of my children was talking about in high school, he was in a school that just had a very unusually high percentage of academically gifted kids. And my son was making a comment about how it's just impossible. He's a very academically gifted child himself, but there's just no way he can compete with the Asian kids. And the Asians, some Asian families and cultures have a really, really strong work ethic that we in American culture, for the most part, lack. And
have lost. Let's say
well, have lost.
Thank you,
Debbie. I think that's an important. I think it's an important correction, because we got to this country because of people who were determined enough to sail across an ocean in a piece of wood that I'd be scared to get on for a short trip, let alone go across an ocean on. So I mean, these people were determined. And they suffered, and they worked hard, and they built a nation. They annihilated the natives here, which is a whole other story, which is profoundly sad.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that horrible travesty aside, and not to diminish it one iota by saying that, but people worked very, very hard to create and establish the country that we have. And you know, when you work hard for your children or for future generations, you hope it's because you're going to create something where they don't have to work as hard. But we are learning, have learned repeatedly and are about to learn in a really big way again, I think, that, you know, the old adage about, you know, freedom is not something that once you get it, I don't remember the particular saying, maybe you can help me with that, Debbie, but the concept is freedom is not something that once you get it, you have it and it's all over with. You know, you have to be constantly vigilant because there's always somebody who wants to take it away from you for their personal gain. And this is what we see happening at a really disturbing rate with the vaccine issue. And I discussed a lot of that in the first half hour of the show in particular instances, but, you know, across the board and in other ways too. And a lot of this has to do, some people will tell you and I would believe, with efforts to redistribute wealth. You know, Obamacare and most big legislation is not really about fixing problems. It's about manipulating the system by those who are in a position of power and control to do that. And they didn't get to those positions of power and control by being benevolent and generous and sharing everything they got with everybody else. And I'm not suggesting everybody needs to do that. But they got where they were because of learning how to and actually manipulating the system to their personal advantage. And we have a culture which, sadly, in many ways encourages us to do that. You know, this is capitalistic society. If you're going to succeed, you got to work hard and so forth. But inevitably, in a capitalistic system, when businesses are competing, they're going to bump up against not only their competition, but they're going to bump up against moral and ethical boundaries and legal boundaries. And if you're going to out-compete economically your competition, you're going to ask yourself, well, what's the cost financially of crossing these boundaries? And we end up with things like we have with the pharmaceutical industry, where criminal fines in the hundreds of millions of dollars are common, and there's even been at least a couple, if not a few, billion-dollar criminal fines. Not because somebody accidentally committed a crime. You don't get a criminal fine unless you deliberately engage in criminal behavior. And in the case of the pharmaceutical industry, this happens repeatedly over and over again. You know, I think
I just posted one.
Okay.
This is the one about Neurontin. And basically it says that gabapentin, Neurontin, is the snake oil of the 20th century. It has been reported to be successful in just about everything that has been studied. And what they say is, and I'm opening it up, December 11, 2013, by Pat Anson, on nationalpainreport.com, the U.S. Supreme Court this week let stand a jury verdict that ordered Pfizer to pay $142 million to Kaiser Foundation Health for the illegal marketing of Neurontin, an anti-seizure drug that is widely prescribed off-label to treat fibromyalgia and migraines. And this is a long article worth reading, understanding what is going on in the healthcare system. Gabapentin is the snake oil. What is it doing? Basically, the manipulated research and information behind the marketing of Neurontin misled physicians, pharmacists, and patients alike into using this expensive drug for off-label uses where the evidence did not support it. That's a Kaiser Foundation Health statement. And, you know, basically what's going on in healthcare is the science has dropped off the foundation of medicine. When reports are manipulated, information is suppressed, people are using medications without reporting adverse events or using, you know, when you use drugs, mixing drugs, giving so many drugs, you really don't know what that is doing in the body. I mean, that's probably a whole nother show. So I just wanted to give you a good number out there for lawsuits and jury verdicts on pharma.
You know, Debbie, I saw a piece on TV with drawing a blank on the gentleman's first name, but Anderson. You know, a mainstream show, and he did a show on Pfizer.
Anderson Cooper?
Yeah, Anderson Cooper. That was, his first name then. Did a show on Pfizer when they had a $1 billion criminal fine back in 2009 and then a $1.3 billion civil fine that went along with it. And the way this whole thing was set up in terms of how it was handled, but at the end of the day, the $1 billion they said was something like 3 months' profit. They lost profit for 3 months from that, which is, you know, that's a pretty heavy hit, but not enough to cause them to change their tactics and their strategy. So, you know, $100 million sounds like a lot of money to you and me, and I'm sure it's not something they're happy to pay. But that's 1 or 2 days' profit. You know, that's a glitch in their machinery. That's not a major disincentive. And then the federal government turns around and pays them billions of dollars, for example, to when I say them, I mean referring to the pharmaceutical industry in general. I don't know specifically what sums go to, but it's in the billions of dollars. Each year they pay the companies to develop vaccines. So, you know, they're going to get that. They've already gotten that money up front, or they're going to get it back. It's not like, you know, it's not like it's a serious penalty or disincentive. You know, the status quo continues, which is to illegally market drugs because it's profitable to do that. Even after paying these fines, they still walk away with a net profit. There was one instance where a company's initial fine was over $800 million, and the court reduced it to $200-something million because they couldn't afford the $800 million. And the Pfizer fine, the Anderson Cooper segment, they were supposed to be legally not allowed to do business with the government because of having that particular fine. And they got around that by creating a shell company, a company that exists on paper but doesn't otherwise exist or do anything, and that's the company that took the penalty, that penalty, and Pfizer keeps on doing business. So the whole thing is, you know, rigged is the only, you know, reasonable common sense term that comes to mind here that accurately describes this. The whole thing is rigged so that there's the appearance of some policing and penalties and so forth, and those penalties exist. I don't have any reason to think that doesn't occur and they aren't paid, but if it was a penalty that was going to actually serve the intended purpose of penalties, it would discourage and dissuade and ultimately prevent the same kind of behavior from continuing, and the same kind of behavior hasn't stopped. It keeps going on.
Yes, and this goes along across the border. I mean, what I'm saying is they might make new regulations, and I really wanted to talk about the fact that they're going to try to limit the use of antibiotics in raising our animals. But there is no supervision for that. They might make a rule or a law saying, but it is basically voluntary by the cattle and farming industry to change what they are doing, which will cost them megabucks to get off of giving their animals antibiotics to protect them from illness and disease basically because of the living conditions and the food that they're providing to raise these animals. And how are they going to change what they're doing in order to not need the antibiotics? So that is going to be interesting to see what happens, because that affects all of our lives if you're eating any animal, chicken, poultry, beef, goats, I don't know, whatever you're, maybe goats are okay, but the other lamb, you know, whatever you're eating, if it's raised with GMO grain or antibiotics, and we don't have any kind of system in place that is going to supervise, then they can really get away with it, even if the law is on the books.
Multifaceted, complicated issue. Let's go ahead.
let me give you this one report. I just got in theecologist.org. It's a news. It says special report: deformities, sickness, and livestock deaths, the real cost of GM cattle feed. And much of our meat and dairy produce is made from animals raised on GM feeds. Alarming news claims suggest that the GM diet is affecting animal health, prompting fears over human safety. And, you know, you can take a look and read more about that. But basically, the animals are being born deformed. And this is the trend today. And it's all about the GM soy and sprayed with herbicide glyphosate. So it's a matter of, as you said, this vigilance that we must have and not let go of. I think I found, let me see if I can find it again. There was a quote that you wanted to have, and now it's kind of disappeared off of my screen.
Well, Debbie,
if I find it, I'll let you know. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's go to break here. We got to get in a break, and maybe we can find that during the break and come back. Fascinating, inherently complex, downright scary where we are, where we've been heading, and where it looks like we're going. And it's the vigilance, of course, is critical, key, first step, awareness and education. But we got to act, too. We can't just become aware of it and then say, okay, now that I know this, it's going to go away. It's going to take some action, because there are a lot of people who are aware. I remember hearing that there was a poll that showed that a third or more of people, in fact, I think there have been polls showing even more than half people in the U.S. now have questions about the official 9/11 story, but that hasn't been something that has caused it to be reopened and reinvestigated and re-explored, for example. So even having a majority doesn't necessarily mean that anything happens. However, a very active minority, a very loud minority, can sometimes change things. So we got to become aware of it, and we got to figure out, well, what is it that actually is going to work here in terms of fixing these problems? You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brock and Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips. We're going to go to a short break here, but we'll be right back. Please stay with us.
Hello everyone, Proof here again. I want to let you know about our brand new sponsor, Silver Leaf Tea. Now, as you guys know that have listened to me for years, I am a tea aficionado. I have hundreds of different flavors and styles at my house, and Silver Leaf has exactly the kind of stuff that I look for. I love loose tea, great antioxidants. I just love the taste of it, and this Silver Leaf has black, they have green, they have white, they have organic. great for hot tea and iced tea. Silver Leaf Tea, it's right on our website, freedomizerradio.com. And check it out and order it, Silver Leaf Tea.
I'm not a lab rat.
I'm not a lab rat.
My family is not a bunch of lab rats.
I am not a lab rat.
Thanks, but no thanks.
80% of the processed food in America has been genetically modified.
That's GMOs. That's GMOs.
You can't even tell what foods contain GMOs at the grocery store.
Because no GMO food labels are required. That makes us the guinea pigs.
Sounds like an experiment to me.
GMOs are scary.
It's up to you.
You're an adult. You can vote.
I can't vote because I'm a kid.
Vote yes. Vote yes. Please vote yes. Count the cookie.
Freedomizer, you have a voice.
How will you vote when initiatives are added to the ballot in your state?
Hello again, Freedomist. Proof is here, and I want to talk to you about a brand new soda maker called SodaStream. Now, the Proof House has had SodaStream for about a year, and we love the thing. We use it quite often. With SodaStream, you can have fresh-made soda in seconds. One of the big things we like about it is that there's no high fructose corn syrup and no aspartame. There's over 60 flavors, or you can create your own. Not just sodas, they also have iced teas and energy drinks. Here at the Proof House, we make egg cream sodas all the time. Some other facts to consider here, there's no electricity, no more wasted bottles and cans, and the most important thing is that it tastes great. Keep in mind, too, this is a perfect family present for Christmas, or, hey, just surprise the family with something great. Also, for a limited time, there's free shipping, so go to freedomizerradio.com and look for the SodaStream link, and I hope you check out the product. That's SodaStream right on freedomizerradio.com.
We are back with Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. Vaccine Rights Attorney Alan Phillips here, and with me, my wonderful co-host, founder of Homeopathy World Community, Debbie Brock. Debbie, where did we leave off before break?
Oh, you wanted to know about vigilance. We have depended on the government for so much, for so long, that we as people have become less vigilant of our liberties. As long as the government provides largesse for the majority, the special interest lobbyists will succeed in continuing the redistribution of welfare programs that occupies most of Congress's legislative time. Basically, Daniel Webster said, "God grants liberty only to those who love it and are always ready to guard and defend it," unquote. Elmer Davis said, "With a great price, our ancestors obtained this freedom, but we were born free." But that freedom can be retained only by the eternal vigilance, which has always been its price, unquote. So basically, it's every single day on this planet that you are alive, you must continue. You cannot take your freedom for granted. It's, you are always in charge of yourself and those around you who are making the rules for you, who may have intend to dominate you in some way. And most people don't realize how hard fought it was to win the freedoms and to maintain them. That is our job. Every day you are born again.
Wow. Well, we certainly have our work cut out for us. You know, we've been slack on the job, whether it's apathy or ignorance or whatever combination of factors. So that's why we're here, Debbie, to
what are we going to talk about?
Well, I wanted to, you know, I actually...
How about Gardasil?
Well, let me ask you to hold on just a moment on that, because we got off a little bit on GMOs, and I actually wanted to stay on that track for just one more point here. I've got, as you know, Debbie, and listeners know, I have a couple of websites, vaccinerights.com, but then another one, pandemicresponseproject.com, which is right now where I'm posting vaccine news articles. And I try to be very focused. Not only do I limit that almost exclusively to vaccine articles, but I actually limit that even further to usually dealing with legal or political issues and not so much the more medical or scientific, because there's plenty of other sites out there that have that very well covered. And but I posted a GMO article recently there that I want to talk about. The title of the article is 105 Scientists Slam GMO Rat Study Retraction. Because this is an example, it's a blatant example, and GMOs and vaccines are not unrelated issues.
They
there
are related. I just explained that in my last comment with what happens when you feed the GMO grains to the animals, and then you have to give them vaccines for illness. Go ahead.
Right, but as well, there is now at least one GMO vaccine already on the market, the flu block vaccine, where they culture the virus that's in the vaccine in genetically modified insect cells. And who knows what the long-term results of all these are. Well, more and more studies have been coming out in recent years talking about the harm from GMO foods. And so there was this study that found that GMOs caused severe problems in rats. I was just looking at the article because the issue here was not the content of that study per se, but I believe it showed that GMOs had caused cancers in rats. But in any case, this was a standard, thoroughly peer-reviewed paper, and the paper was recently retracted. Now, from time to time, a study is found to be flawed or fraudulent or for some reason problematic, and then there's not only the ability, but there's the obligation for the editors of whatever the journal is to retract the study, to basically say, oops, never mind, forget we ever published that. So we have a study that's retracted. So the fact that a study gets retracted in and of itself is not a big deal. It's actually happened increasingly in recent years. It's a big deal in the sense that if the retraction rate is increasing, then there's a growing problem with problematic studies for whatever combination of reasons. But in this particular instance, this is an article that's at the Activist Post. Activistpost.com is the website. And according to an article published just earlier this month in The Ecologist, the retraction of this particular study is arbitrary, groundless, that this was a thoroughly peer-reviewed paper, and that the arbitrary groundless retraction is without precedent in the history of scientific publishing and raises grave concerns over the integrity and the impartiality of science. I don't think it's science that we have a problem with, though. I think it's the people in some of the people in the scientific community. And here's three really critical points to this issue. Because by retracting the study, what you're saying is, oops, never mind, GMOs are really okay. That's, heavily implied there. Or this research that says they're not okay, that they're harmful, nah, they aren't really harmful, this was a bad study for some reason. But here's the problem. There was an ex-Monsanto employee, Richard Goodman, who was appointed to a newly created post of associate editor for biotechnology at this Food and Chemical Toxicology. That's the name of the journal where the study was originally published. So they create a new position of associate editor. They appoint an ex-Monsanto employee. Now, there was another study finding potentially harmful effects from GMOs, which apparently was also retracted almost immediately.
In the same journal?
In a different journal. And then there was a study published by Monsanto scientists in the same journal a few years ago where they found a gross error, is what they referred to as a gross error, but it was not retracted. So what's being portrayed in this article is something that is blatantly political, that we're going to keep the studies that favor GMOs because that's the outcome we want people to believe. That's what we want people to believe the reality is. And any study, or not necessarily any and every, but certainly a couple of these studies here that are showing serious problems with GMOs, we're going to retract those studies or not publish them at all is more likely what we're going to start seeing. Because that's not good for business and whatever other agendas are going on here that maybe have nothing to do directly with business per se. But the article goes on to say here, the first bulleted item where you create a post, you appoint somebody who is by definition opposed to the revealing of any actual harm caused by GMOs, and he just very conveniently retracts the study. This is just really disturbing, what it says about Monsanto's tactics in gaining corporate control over more and more segments of society, commerce, and government. Shouldn't someone question the revolving door policy that we have here? Their former chief lobbyist, Michael Taylor, Monsanto's former chief lobbyist, has been involved.
You've been
in
talking
agencies.
About this for years, Alan.
Well,
The
concept of conflicts of interest, of revolving door between industry and agency, yes. So it's nothing new. And, of course, we've talked about this with vaccines. And the one that comes to mind right off the top of my head was the Cochrane collaboration back in 2010, where they've over several years they've done many reviews of flu vaccines. But one they published in 2010 where they said, we see, you know, in terms of does the medical literature show support for the effectiveness of flu vaccines in healthy adults. And when they scrutinize the studies, they aren't just collecting all the conclusions, but when they actually go back and review and scrutinize the studies, they find little or no evidence for flu vaccines, but they find, and this is a quote from their review, widespread evidence of manipulation of conclusions. So we hear this from multiple sources. We hear this from now multiple industries. The corporate world is increasingly using its influence to manipulate and control things, not just to control it so they can make sure everything is done right, but to control it so that they can deliberately lie to us in order to, again, further their agendas. And there's a point at which you got to say, are there really this many psychotic people who get into positions of power who really, and maybe psychotic's not the right word I'm looking for, but people who are just, let's say, incompetent or careless or whatever, or is there really some agenda here? Because as you see this become more common, more firmly entrenched, it just suggests something bigger and deeper and more sinister than purely money, although you don't have to look any farther than just the money to see that what's happening here is a redistribution of wealth in the U.S., continuing to squeeze more and more money out of the middle class and sliding it up to that top. It's probably far less than 1%, but that very top tiny percent that has just the enormously gross majority of the income.
The middle class is disappearing.
Yes.
The middle class is totally disappearing. So there's not much to squeeze. So that's the problem. That's something that I was hinting at earlier.
Yes.
Basically, I hear you loud and clear that you say the levels of corporate control over the different segments of our population, and we see that they are doing it in every step of the process, whether it is who they hire to do the research and pay them off, when the information becomes clear that it is not in favor of their agenda to promote a particular drug, that they shush them up in some way or another. If somebody is going to be a whistleblower, they make it very difficult for them to do that. Then in publications in scientific journals, which give them authority and criteria of this is a good product, that is being manipulated and in many levels of the hierarchy, what you said in what the editors approve, and then who are the editors And can they then easily change who is the governing body of that particular publication? Is there no total objectives, you know, people who are in a place of objectivity so that they can take in facts and review? And that's the other thing. How many people are reviewing the authenticity of the work? Then you get to the next level and the media to publish and broadcast what I would call propaganda, but broadcast this information as true, as fact. That is also, in the control of the people in power, because they're obligated to say whatever they're told because they're paying for the marketplace there. And if they don't, then they're going to lose the funding to continue their media. It's a big circle. And I'm wondering, I mean, this has really been a very political talk we've had today, how to cut the cord, how to break the circle, how to stop it from being all within that small, the hands of the few.
Well, and that's the $64,000 question, Debbie. You know, part of it, of course, is for us to keep doing the work that we're doing here, sharing information as we understand it, informing ourselves, and setting an example that hopefully others will follow in whatever way works best for them, both in terms of educating themselves and when and where appropriate, sharing and educating others. You have to be real careful about that sometimes because not everybody else wants to be educated or is able to be. But increasingly more and more people are waking up and realizing they can't just believe everything their doctor says or the CDC says or the government says. And at the bottom of that rabbit hole, if you choose to chase the rabbit, as you I have found anyway, I'll let other people, you know, figure that out for themselves, and maybe they'll come to a different conclusion. But my conclusion is that, or my experience is that, the deeper I dig, the messier it gets. And that it really is important, for example, to have smaller and smaller government. Government should be no bigger than is necessary to cover the minimum requirements, the things that require having a government to do in the first place. But beyond anything that's required as absolute minimum, there should not, government should be no bigger than that, because any time that power is accumulated and concentrated, it attracts people who want to use, manipulate, or control that power for personal or private gain. So we need to create a disincentive for companies to control government by not having anything there of interest for them to control in the first place. And one of the ways you do that is to have smaller government. Right now, though, we are seeing bigger and bigger government. You know, what in the world is this bizarre notion of government mandating that you have to participate in health insurance? You know, that's just such a foreign concept to the principles on which this country was founded, and I think unconstitutional. And it's not like I know better than the Supreme Court, but I think that was a political decision and not a legal one. And in today's world, there are many decisions that are political and not legal, as I keep talking about in the vaccine arena.
Alan, you know what? In a person with a heart of gold, a good soul, righteous and wanting for everyone to have their needs met, have health care provisions. It sounds good. It really sounds good that everybody should put a little into the pool and everybody will be able to get their care. But something is fishy. Something is not working because it wasn't thought out to the nth degree of how to really make it work amidst a system that is totally broken. But if we had started out on a strong foundation and we were living in a small community, a small government, like local governments, and everybody said, we're going to support the hospital in our town and the physicians in our town, and everybody in our town can go to this hospital and go to the clinics and get care. Doesn't that sound good?
Well, there's always a wonderful veneer put on whatever the legislative agenda is, but what is not, you know, I mean, how much farther than this do you need to go? The Speaker of the House in Congress, when the bill gets passed, says, okay, now that it's passed, we get to read it and see what's in it.
Oh, my God.
That's literally what Nancy
Pelosi,
that's what Nancy Pelosi said. You can go on the internet and watch it on YouTube videos. This is, you know, the level of insanity we have here. This is not something that was written by people who need access to insurance or by organizations who represent those people. This was written by the insurance industry and the pharmaceutical industry, and those people are not benevolent, let's, you know, help the rest of the world kind of people. They have agendas that they pursue aggressively, as we keep talking about, to the point of engaging in criminal behavior on a regular basis. They're not the people who should be, you know, providing health care for anybody. They're not the people that should be designing laws concerning health. They're criminals. And they should not be, they should be criminally prosecuted. They should be removed from society. They should be jailed. And we need to send strong messages that nobody's above the law. But in this country, if you're a politician, you're above the law. If you're a judge, you're above the law. If you are a corporate CEO in a large business or industry, you are above the law. You can do what you want to and either pay a fine and get away with it or get away with it altogether. And if you are someone who tries to fix that corruption, you might as well, you're a saint in my opinion, but you might as well be a criminal, because you're going to, there are people who have lost their careers trying to do the right thing and doing the right thing. And people have been, you know, taken down for that, and it's you know, disturbing and sad. So what can we do? I mean, I don't want to sit here and end the day on a sad note where it sounds like we're all screwed and there's nothing we can do. In the vaccine arena, you can join without any cost the National Vaccine Information Center's advocacy portal, and it's at NVIC, the acronym for National Vaccine Information Center, NVICAdvocacy.org, O-R-G. And you can monitor the bills in your state and states around the country. You can see what's going on in the vaccine arena. That website is exclusively for vaccine legislation. You're not going to see anything about GMOs or other healthcare issues, only vaccines. And they make it very easy to participate in the legislative system. You can sign up for free. They'll keep your information confidential, but by putting in your information, they'll tell you who your representatives are. So when there's a bill that we need to support because it promotes the right to make informed choices, or a bill to oppose because it's just something to make more money for the pharmaceutical industry while causing unnecessary suffering in the process, then we can oppose those. And it can be as simple as a couple of minutes sending an email, a few minutes writing a letter, you know, when the time is right for that. But, of course, people can be as much more involved legislatively as they're moved to be and have time to be. And it's really important. You know, people say, oh, I'm going to write a letter to my legislature or send them an email. Don't, this is my personal opinion, don't do that. You're going to get back a form letter if you get anything at all. You need to sit down face-to-face with your representatives. And if you want to get together a group and do that, if you can do that, all the better. And you need to have a bullet point list of your issues and concerns, something you can cover in 5 minutes and hand to somebody that they can read in 5 minutes, 10 at the most. And you underscore these critical, fundamental issues. Vaccines do cause injury and death. Vaccines do cause autism. The federal government has paid out millions of dollars probably at this point to dozens and dozens of vaccine-injured kids with autism. And the CDC's answer to that is, oh, well, that's not what we look at. Of course it's not, because if you look at that, it's going to make you a liar. It's going to let people know that you've been giving false information for the last 25 years about vaccines and autism. So you got to take these facts. We've got to educate our representatives because the only education they have at this point is what the pharmaceutical industry says. So you've got to talk to them face to face, if at all possible, though, if you really want them to hear and respond to your issue. Debbie, we're out of time here. We got to run a couple of quick ads.
Okay.
And pass the baton over to you. I find myself trying to switch off before the half hour every show, and we end up every time going past that, and I feel like you're not getting your fair share of time here. But let's do some quick ads
Don't
that we're
worry.
Obligated to do. Well, thanks for your thanks for being gracious about that. You're listening to Vaccines and Your Rights in the U.S. with Homeopathy World Community founder Debbie Brook and vaccine rights attorney Alan Phillips. And we're going to go to break, and we're going to come back, and then Debbie Brook is going to be with you and talk to you about homeopathy. Debbie, you want to give folks a little teaser about what you're going to touch on today?
I think I'm just going to make a mention about diabetes may lead to Alzheimer's disease in aging people. And we know that there is also a link between vaccines and diabetes. Then I think I might want to talk a little bit about stress, because that's my issue. We're always talking about stress, and it's going to be stress incontinence.
So, folks, if you're feeling like you're just a little too stressed to listen to this, that's exactly why you should be listening to this. So stick around after the break. Debbie is always fascinating to listen to. She knows her stuff. Excellent researcher, knows homeopathy very, very well. You don't want to miss this, folks. So stick around, and we'll be back with you in just a little bit. But during break, I want to tell you a little bit about some of the other shows available on Freedomizer Radio.
When tyranny rears its ugly head, will you bow and serve, or will you stand and fight?
Hi, everybody. This is Barack Obama. You get this hunger.
Everybody here wants the pie. We want to grow the pie, and then we want to fight for the pie.
When freedom is threatened, will you turn a blind eye, or will you sound the alarm?
The private sector is doing fine.
Hey folks, this is The Mouth, host of The Last Voice for Liberty Network. Tune in Tuesday nights at 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 Central for your ultimate dose of liberty right here on FreedomizerRadio.com.
What can we get done right now?
What?
This is the politics of the moment. This has to do with what can we get done right now?
What?
This is the politics of the moment. This has to do with what can we get done right now?
Lindsay Williams on Freedomizer Radio.
Seems things are happening so fast now. And again, I want to thank you for the privilege of allowing me to be with your audience and with you tonight. Everyone out there in your listening audience, they should listen to you every single day. Don't you miss a program. Lord bless. Everybody set that spiritual house in order. It's the most important thing out there. Thank you and good night.
Hello, Freedomizers. Welcome to the No Bull Zone. If you have seen through the veil of lies coming from lamestream media, join Ferdinand for a perspective from the trenches. Want to chime in? Call now, 347-324-3704. That's the No Bull Zone with Ferdinand every Monday night, 7:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, only on Freedomizer Radio.
Hi, Freedomizers. I'm Lily Gonzalez, announcing my new show, Roaring for Healthcare with Tiger Lily. I was a registered nurse for many years, caring for patients from birth to death in 36 facilities across the nation, and I know firsthand just how utterly broken our healthcare system is. But now I'm free from nursing. so I'm able and thrilled to give you some juicy behind-the-scenes insights and advice to help you and your loved ones get the most from our healthcare system. Join me Monday through Friday from 9 to 10 a.m. Pacific Time to roar about healthcare only on Freedomizer Radio.
Well, we're back. Debbie, I'm going to pass the baton over to you. Take it away.
Okay. So I mentioned, first of all, I want to thank Alan. He's a fantastic co-host, been doing this show with him for going on 4 years. And if you're looking for somebody who has spent his life investigating and gathering information about vaccines and what your rights are, waivers and exemptions, no matter what place in society you hold, whether you need somebody to be a speaker at your event or write up a white paper, he's your man. So I want you to know that. You can contact him at, I guess, pandemicresponseproject.com or vaccinerights.com, and he will respond most likely in a day or two because he's a pretty busy guy. And so now we're going to move on to this issue that I just mentioned about a connection between diabetes may lead to Alzheimer's disease in aging people. Now, another thing that I'd like you to note is I had a show way back in February of this year with Marcus Hines. And he has a really powerful Facebook page where, because he had a life experience where his daughter had vaccines and became diabetic, and that became his life mission. And his website is Vaccceptable Injuries, Increasing Childhood Diseases and Developmental Disorders, educates parents about the scientifically documented risks involved in vaccinations. So I think you're going to hear this more and more about risks to vaccinations. And you think about it, Alzheimer's is talking about brain function, neurological development, memory lapse, synapse dysfunction, and not being able to make connections, not being able to communicate with the outside world, with your loved ones. And therefore, it's really a serious condition and costs plenty of megabucks in the long run for caring for these aging people. The article says people suffering from Alzheimer's disease, AD, are most likely to have a history of diabetes since their midlife. This is the conclusion of a recent study published in Diabetes Care. Diabetes and AD both show an increased prevalence among the elderly. Numerous studies have demonstrated an association between diabetes and memory problems. And so you think about heavy metals. What is it doing to your brain? It's causing some kind of pathological changes in there. They also say insulin resistance, a condition when the body fails to respond to the normal actions of hormone insulin, seen in people with type 2 diabetes, may have negative effects on their cognition. And you have to think, you know, this is a really complex issue. We're not just talking about vaccines. We're talking about environmental triggers, pesticides, insecticides, GMO, everything that's in our house and outside of our house, and what is causing these disconnections in our lives, in our brain, in our thought, in our memory. And so I think that we need to take a closer look at that. And if you're an individual who wants to take a little bit more control, then you have to get on the internet and do your research and find out what are your options for reducing your chances and prevalence of diabetes in your life, whether it means changing your diet, going to that, go to Homeopathy World Community and click on the Gluten Summit, get all of that knowledge base for yourself, and study it and decide what are the minute changes that you can make in your life to get your whole body in a better place. So I wanted to mention that today. And then I wanted to talk a little bit about obviously light. I've been doing a lot of talking about light. And check out the Sunline Sciences, sunshinesciences.com. You get 10% off. It's a fantastic gift during the holiday season to brighten up your inside environment at your desk where you're doing your computer work, where you might have fatigue in your eyes, where you need to move your bones around. Remember to check out that vitamin D level that you have. Go to the doctor or get a lab test, a blood test to check that out. And I do believe that I spoke at length on my Wednesday show on Blog Talk Radio. You can find that at Blog Talk Radio, Homeopathy World Community. It's following the show with Christina Chambreau, DVM, Doctor of Veterinary Medicine. We had a whole talk about the pineal gland and behavior and using click training. It was a really great show. It was last Wednesday, which was yesterday, December 11th, if you want to check it out. Now, I wanted to also make a quick mention about, and I put this up on my Facebook page, Homeopathy World Community Facebook, and on there it is about Utah's Southwest Health Department has banned Gardasil, quote, citing low demand, high cost, and questioning the benefits. There's an entire press release on the PR web about this issue, and you have to take it one step at a time. We keep hearing drop, like a drop of water, creating a canyon, creating this pool of water. Every day there's another little bit of information regarding the either efficacy or the fact that it's not working or the fact that it's causing problems in the people who are getting these injections, and also the financial cost, short-term and long-term. Emotional cost, mental cost, what is the cost of these vaccines? So I think that it's really up to you to do a little bit of more investigation and tune into these shows. So go to Homeopathy World Community on Facebook and you can find the link all about that particular issue about Gardasil and the whole background and history of preventing HPV infection. I've written at length about it, and there's tons of science. The health ministries of Japan and Israel have both raised serious concerns regarding the HPV vaccine. And if you remember, drugs.com website in June of 2013 reported that the Japanese government, quote, has withdrawn its recommendation for vaccination after receiving hundreds of side effects, reports of long-term pain and numbness, among other things, unquote. And you've got many other authorities, scientific and medical authorities, who are putting this particular Gardasil vaccination into question for health and safety, and why are we advocating it in both boys and girls who are not even of age to be sexually active. Okay, we're going to move right along to homeopathy. I wanted to mention the indiscriminate use of antibiotics is causing resistant bugs, and we are past the antibiotic era. I put a little, I think my own little personal quote on there, if I could find it. I will give it to you, but I get my own ideas. I don't know what people think about them. I put them on Homeopathy World Community, and you can just take a look at it. Okay, we're just going to move right along to something that I wanted to talk about since we have limited time today, and that is stress, bladder incontinence, and there's so much information out there that we are providing for you on Homeopathy World Community. And Karen Allen, earlier in the month of November, homeopath, talked about overactive bladder syndrome and incontinence, leaky bladder, the use of Kegel exercises, self-care, personal hygiene, diet, lifestyle, exercise, your clothing, and homeopathy. She gives us some key hints and tips. And, of course, always check with your healthcare provider, your homeopath, your physician, your nurse, and they will supervise what it is that you need to do to get in a better way. Since yesterday is my pet once a month on Wednesday, the second week of each month on a Wednesday at 10:30, I'm on the Blog Talk Radio with Dr. Christina Chambrow talking about pets, the holistic pet care. I thought I would just throw this out, which is urinary incontinence in canines, back to the veterinarians, and whether they are getting some success. Some people have found success using a couple of homeopathic remedies in low potency. That means a 6C or a 30C. Those are remedies that you can find in your natural health food store, or you can order them over the internet distribution pharmacies. I'm going to just list them off right now, and then I'm going to go into depth with a couple of them. One is Plantago Major. Another is Gelsemium Sempervirens. The third is Cantharis. The fourth is Causticum. The fifth one is Illumina. And the sixth one is Pulsatilla. And so now to go into a little bit more in-depth, this is, you know, even though this article comes straight from a veterinarian, Denise Shea, this can also apply to humans because we are also mammals. So the first remedy that I want to go into a little bit of depth is Causticum. Causticum is to be used in some form of urinary incontinence in which the physical symptoms, such as bedwetting or enuresis, can occur, especially during the early stages of sleep in the nighttime. So when you first go to sleep, you might find that your child is wetting the bed. Other physical actions, such as the act of coughing, ordinary acts such as laughing, moderate actions like walking, actions like sneezing, also can bring about the incontinence. And it can be humiliating, inconvenient, and sudden. And although you know every time that you get a chill and you sneeze, you're going to lose or some of your bladder function and you're going to leak into your pants, this is something that we need to look at closely, and you need to have a healthcare provider check what is causing this. Is it weak muscles? Is it a surgery that has occurred sometime in your history? Is it from holding your bladder too much in school as a young child? Is it from giving birth? And your muscles have been stretched out. What is going on with you that you have a weakening of the bladder? And it may even feel as if it is paralyzed and unresponsive. Very often I've seen many stories of horses birthing foals, and if there is a paralysis in any way in the foal or the mother, then this remedy, Causticum, might often be given because it's known for paralysis in like Bell's palsy on the right side of the face, but it is also for the sphincter muscles of the body. Other physical symptoms can include urination, which dribbles out instead of coming in a flow. The person consequently feels better if he or she urinates sitting down. The condition of the patient tends to rapidly worsen toward the hours of the evening, in the hours of the morning, and around 3 to 4 a.m. The appearance of one or more of these symptoms calls for the immediate use of Causticum based on this note from Dr. Shea. And of course, you always need to individualize treatment to make sure you're selecting the right remedy and the right potency and the right frequency of dosing. Those are all important things to learn and get guidance on. Another remedy, I don't even think I mentioned it in my list. I didn't. Equisetum. Equisetum is used in suffering from urinary incontinence also. And we only have a couple minutes, about 8 minutes left to the show. So I'm going to do this quickly. used in suffering from urinary incontinence with symptoms of enuresis bedwetting, especially in children. That is one of the things that can be habitual for children to have the first stage of sleep, very similar to colostomy. The episodes of bedwetting exhibited in the child occur when the child is dreaming of crowds or when the child is having nightmares. You could probably see this in a pet if they're in REM sleep and you see the movement and twitching in their face, in their body, in their limbs, in their eyes. This form of urinary incontinence can also affect people with weak bladders. And again, in the elderly, so we're talking about that paralysis again in the elderly, as if, you know, you think of Alzheimer's, it's a paralysis of their the nervous system, of their neurology, of the ability to think and get recall. So there is a form of, it's on the tip of my tongue, I can't even say it. You know, it's almost like you open your mouth and you're paralyzed, you cannot speak. The person affected with this form of urinary incontinence tends to be awakened several times in the night because of the urgent need to urinate. Other physical symptoms that the person may experience include feeling of fullness, the presence of persistent adult pain. Urination does not bring any relief from these symptoms, which is the opposite of another remedy well known is gilsimium, because in this case, with the use of gilsimium, the person who needs it feels great relief every time they go to the bathroom and urinate. For the person who needs Aquacetum, the urine color has changed to a dark color, and the condition of the patient rapidly worsens when the person moves about, when he or she is sitting, and when pressure is applied, person is touched. And in addition, the patient may also feel discomfort following urination. So we have a few more minutes left. The pulsatilla is needed for some individuals when, again, it is involuntary urination, which we call enuresis, again, in the first stage of sleep. Sudden urination, again, when there is sneezing, coughing, passing gas, or laughing. This form of incontinence can also affect the person following an attack of measles. And in women, the condition can develop during pregnancy. After some sort of excitement, such as nervous reactions to sudden and loud noises, like startling, like a child who startles and urinates, such a form of urinary incontinence can also result when the person has made it a habit of resisting the normal urge to urinate repeatedly over a long period of time. And you know what? That's for the child who is in school and doesn't want to get out of their seat, doesn't want to make attention to themselves, doesn't want to feel embarrassed because they have to go to the bathroom, and so they hold it all day, and then they get a weakened bladder. The urine may dribble out even when the person is sitting or walking. This form of incontinence in the young girl brings out sudden and inconvenient desire to urinate. So that means they must rush to the bathroom. Otherwise, they're going to lose it, and it creates a lot of discomfort. So you can see that there are a number of psychological etiology background to selecting the appropriate homeopathic remedy based upon their disposition, whether they're mild, whether they're moody, whether they're weepy, whether they're stoic, whether they're self-assured and still have a problem. So what is this all about? You have to really get a personality picture and find out what are the concomitants, what are the other things that is going on during the incontinence. What about the generals, whether the person is chilly or hot-blooded, whether the person prefers to be outside or inside. All of these kinds of things will contribute to deciding what is the appropriate homeopathic remedy to deal with. And we're talking about stress incontinence. The stress in our lives can come out in the way that we're able to function, the way that we're able to hold our own. And you can see how our body talks for us. When we don't want to say it out loud, our body is going to speak no matter what. Pulsatilla child is fair and does not have any thirst at all, where the Gelsimium person would really want to drink a lot. And so you can see those are other kinds of general conditions in the individual that will help a homeopath make a decision what is the appropriate remedy. So also seasonally, this can happen seasonally. This can happen people who sneeze and cough in the sun, from the sun or other reasons, or whether there's been a burn. So cantharis is typically for burns. And alumina is one of the antidotes for heavy metal poisoning, like lead poisoning, mercury poisoning, aluminum poisoning, which we might find in our environment and some of these metals in our vaccines. So alumina might be a helpful homeopathic remedy in the case of incontinence. We welcome your requests for what we want to talk about on this show. Alan and I thank you greatly for any feedback that you might provide for us. We want to know who is listening. Who is listening? Give us go to Homeopathy World Community on Facebook and leave us a note, send us a message. Tell us that you have been tuning in to freedomizerradio.com or homeopathyworldcommunity.com. And these shows are valuable to you. They are giving you educational information. What more do you want to hear? I'm going to remind you again, on Monday, the Health In Show, we will have Dr. Robert Bruck talking about society and the healthcare situation right now, and it's going to be really controversial. It's a video, live video show on the Health In. Go to homeopathyworldcommunity.com and click on the banner to find out more information. We also have lots and lots of resources on homeopathyworldcommunity.com. I invite you to go there and open up any page to read the information. It is a social network, specifically professional homeopaths. So I want to send waves of awareness, lots of love, lots of healing, and good wishes to everyone while we listen to some commercials and advertisements that keeps Freedomizer Radio alive. So keep tuning in. We're going to have another show coming up soon.
Did you know most Americans know nothing or very little about the legal system? I am the Rose, Rose Colombo, longtime legal activist, legal coach, legal advocate, and the author of Fight Back Legal Abuse, Irwin Award winner, and also my latest political satire, Obamacare Dinosaur Pregnant.
Thank you for listening to Vaccinations and Your Rights in the U.S. with co-hosts Alan Phillips and Debbie Bruck on Homeopathy World Community Radio. Remember to educate before you vaccinate.
Think of us together, like people everywhere. We dream about a world at work, where people really care. Our paths now lie before us, our journeys can't be ended. So they do as we bring out the wisdom. Your peace be of